Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Travolting, covering domestic disturbance. Enjoy the episode.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Stuart. So, I was noticing, watching this movie, it's a bit of a disturbance.
A disturbance in what?
A little bit of a domestic one.
A domestic disturbance?
That's right, folks. We're talking domestic disturbance this week.
Have you ever heard of this movie before?
I had never heard of this movie.
Me neither.
This movie certified does not exist.
I mean, it doesn't exist in the sense that it seemed to have been wiped from everybody's memory.
Yeah, like...
Because it exists.
You know at the end of Men in Black 2 where they activate the Statue of Liberty as like the big neuralizer and it wipes everyone in New York's memory?
That was...
They did that with domestic disturbance.
With domestic disturbance.
No one has any memory of this movie.
So... Yeah, like, I mean, there are lots of John Travolta movies where it's like I've never heard of.
Yes.
This being one of them.
Yeah, this is very much in the no one has ever heard of this movie category.
And no, to be honest, like, you're not missing out.
But we're going to talk about how insane this movie kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give it too much credit. Like, it's not that crazy.
Here's the thing. This movie has a $75 million budget. Which is 10 to 15 more than the movie we're talking about next week, Austin Powers in Goldmember, an action movie, a spy action movie with CGI. It's all, Battlefield Earth is $100 million, and that is a whole... This movie has one like set piece, which is a place on fire, and there's one fight scene at the end. And it cost $75 million, which is why this movie is a massive flop.
What? What?
Where did that money go? I want to know.
This was a laundering scheme.
It has to have been.
This movie was a laundering scheme.
Because this movie is essentially Halloween or like a slasher movie. Except what if it was just Vince Vaughn in a business suit hunting you down?
Yeah, I don't know how to really classify this movie.
It's a slasher movie with Vince Vaughn. It's so funny.
Who wrote and directed this?
So this movie is directed by Harold Becker.
He
is a longtime journeyman of Hollywood. Like, he's never really had like a mega hit, never been nominated for a big award or anything, just like consistently turning out movies that make enough and then just go and play on cable on repeat for years. And your dad catches half of it one day after he's done mowing the lawn.
Can you give me an example?
I am going to bring up his other movies. Harold Becker. I should have this stuff ready to go, but I did not. I'm coming in unprepared this week.
Well, we took a tiny little hiatus that the audience probably doesn't know about because...
We're consistent,
but we backlogged a lot of episodes, and now we're coming back into it.
So his other movies are Malice with Alec Baldwin and Nicole Kidman, Mercury Rising, Sea of Love, and Domestic Disturbance are his top four on IMDb. None of those are movies that I've really ever heard of before. Aside from Malice has like a long random speech about fuck you by Alec Baldwin. It was written by Aaron Sorkin. But for the most part, Harold Becker's just one of those guys who makes consistent movies, never really argues with the studio, just a journeyman on his way.
Okay.
And this is one of those movies for sure. For Travolta, we're coming in like right after this is the first movie he films after Battlefield Earth has come out. Because they, you know, Swordfish and Lucky Numbers were filmed before Battlefield Earth had come out. This is
Battlefield Earth came out and it was recognized.
Yes.
People had
this movie was made with the knowledge of Battlefield Earth being the biggest flop of all time. Basically. And so it's a clear, it's kind of an attempt by Travolta to get back to something a little simpler. Even though it has a $75 million budget. He's at this point where he's too big to fail in his career. Like, he can't work on a small project. Even a small project that he works on inflates to a $75 million budget.
Because of his pay?
Because of his pay and just, like, I don't know if it was that or if it's just the people he works with or just when his name gets attached, like, budgets get bigger. But he needs to resettle himself with a small indie like he did with Pulp Fiction. And instead, he just keeps going bigger and bigger. And even the small things he goes to are huge.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
This movie.
I mean, I'm just... we talked about this a few episodes, maybe in the past, but... Like, Battlefield Earth, such a...
Calamity.
That was his fault.
Yes.
Like, because...
And he's in damage control mode now.
Blowout made me want to feel bad for him. This movie makes me want to spit on him. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm just going to be... I'm going to be honest about that. But, yeah, like, I just... I'm seeing him is really tainted his image for me in my eyes. Because of that horrendous movie. And... Looking a little bit ahead in the future, does anything really bring that back?
He has a few more successes. None, like, major. But he has a few more. And they're why we're still in our consideration of the show, still in the A-list era. Because even though he took a hit with that, he's still an A-list star. He's still getting bigger projects. And he has a few moderate successes after this. Such as movies like Hairspray and Bolt that we'll be talking about down the line. But this is not one of those successes.
No, it's not. Do you have very much context for this? I mean,
that's basically the extent of it, that it comes in right after Battlefield Earth. He's trying to recenter himself, but just even the small project he picks becomes a big project.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's not going to do his career any favors.
No, it is not. Nor Vince Vaughn's. The only reason I asked about the writer-director is because this movie is like the perfect, like, 12, 14-year-old screenwriter mad at their stepdad script.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if anyone who's, like, from a broken home who had step-parents that they weren't very fond of.
Mm-hmm.
This is like if a kid got sent to his room by his stepdad. He's like, fucking jerk, and then I'm just going to write a script about you being a murderer. Because honestly, it's like... Was there any outlet where the stepdad could have been the good guy? Like, no. From, like, the very get-go, we're led to believe, like, you know, well, maybe not from the get-go, but, like, this movie is centered around stepdads are evil.
So the writer of this movie is Lewis Kolick. His other credits are October Sky, Ladder 49, and Charlie St. Cloud.
So he wrote another John Travolta
movie. Yes, we'll be talking about him again with Ladder 49.
Interesting.
A bond forged by fire is never broken.
A bond forged by fire is never broken.
That is the tagline for.
Can you believe Joaquin Phoenix is in Ladder 49?
Yeah, we're going to get to talk Walk.
They share the screen together, Joaquin Phoenix and John Travolta.
Yes.
Huh. I think it's interesting. Okay, so the movie starts?
Mm-hmm. So the movie starts.
Very standard opening title sequence of, like, random shots of this town that they live in.
I kind of like the opening credits. I was just like, it's cameras moving back and forth. Or not cameras, like images moving back and forth as the names appear.
Yeah, well, it's meant to serve as a descriptor of where this is all taking place, which is small New England-esque town.
So here's the thing. I want to talk about where this movie's set.
Where is this movie set, Jeff?
So this movie's supposed to be set in Maryland.
Maryland.
And they say it's by D.C. The thing is, the town's called Southport, and it was filmed in Southport, North Carolina. But they keep saying Maryland. So I don't know what's going on here. What? Because if you're gonna set a movie in Southport, North Carolina, it's a coastal town. That's fine. They filmed it there, but they're like, no, it's in Maryland. But they still have all the Southport signs.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
It's very strange,
huh? They just really wanted it set in Maryland.
Yeah. For some reason, we're like, yeah, it's Maryland, just so that they can have one line where Steve Buscemi's like, I was in D.C. I thought I'd pop by.
Oh.
I mean, Southport's still like within driving distance of D.C. It's like a 3 or 4 hour drive.
Yeah. And it would be believable that he drove there to meet Vince Vaughn in the story. Whatever. So,
yeah, the movie starts with these opening credits, and then it gets the best thing any movie can ever have in its opening credits. The words, and Steve Buscemi.
Talk about your lover, Steve Buscemi.
There's no one like him. King don't miss. Now, Steve Buscemi's just great, and I was very happy to see him in this movie, and I loved him in this movie. He's really nice. He's really good.
Do you think that God himself stays in heaven, for he too fears what he's created?
Spy Kids, the Island of Lost Dreams.
Like, that happened in a kid's movie. Yeah. Steve Buscemi just dropped a fucking bomb.
Yeah, and then he got out. Now, Steve Buscemi's just like, he looks like a stubbed out cigarette in this movie. And I say that in the, like, as a compliment. Like, he just looks like a cigarette that was stubbed out. That's his face.
You say that as a compliment, though.
He looks lightly roasted, but still pale.
All right. So Steve Buscemi, Vince Vaughn, John Travolta. And who else is in this movie?
Forget her name, but she was in the Meet the Parents films as Ben Stiller's wife. There's also Matt O'Leary as Danny. Terry Polo is Susan, his ex-wife. So, yeah, movie starts, and we're introduced to John Travolta, who's a shipmaker or a boat maker. He makes wooden boats.
Did you say shipmaker?
I said shipmaker.
Okay, shipmaker.
But he makes wooden boats.
He's
a woodsman, a craftsman.
Yeah.
And his business is going down because no one wants to buy wooden boats anymore.
They want to buy plastic.
And he has a really close relationship with his son, Danny.
And he's divorced.
Yes, and he's divorced from his wife, played by Terry Polo.
Yeah.
Who is going to get remarried to Vince Vaughn, playing Rick Barnes.
Yeah. Who is this Rick Barnes?
He's a guy who says he just came into a lot of money in the stock market and bought some property in this town and is just kind of coasting off that.
So he has money.
He has money.
And he's a friend of the town.
It seems like a friend of the town. He's a new arrival, but he's a friend of the town.
Everybody likes him. Supposedly because he has money and he's charming.
Yes. John Travolta has a good relationship with his ex-wife. They're not too antagonistic. They share custody. He gets him a few days a week. And he's accepting of her getting remarried, even if he finds it difficult personally.
Yeah.
And he just wants what's best for his son.
Yeah. Maybe it's too early to talk about Travolta's performance, but like, especially throughout this like first act, I didn't find anything necessarily wrong with his performance, like his character.
Yeah, Travolta's fine in this. He's not given much to work with.
Right.
Except for like a few scenes, but.
Yeah. I agree with that.
He's giving a competent performance in what is, at the end of the day, a cable TV thriller.
Yes.
Like, this is made to be on TNT.
Very much so. Yeah. It's a good description. What's the boy's name again?
Danny.
Danny.
So they go to Danny's basketball game, and they're going, even though they're divorced, they're going as a couple to support Danny.
And is Rick there already, or?
Rick is, yeah, he's there.
He's there at the basketball game.
He's there.
But
oh, no, he drops her off, but he does not come in.
Right.
Because Danny said he wouldn't play if Rick came, because he doesn't like his stepdad, or his to-be stepdad. He thinks it's a betrayal of his father.
Yeah, and at this point, like, they're already engaged, the mom and Rick.
And they get there, and Danny's not at the game.
He's not at the game.
They get a call from the police.
Did you take a bite of a nut?
I took a peanut, yeah.
Peanut? Okay.
And no regrets. So they go to the police station. They're like, Danny, why'd you try and run away? And he's like, I'm just so mad.
Well, and they set up something that I think was pretty well. By the way, I think the first act of this movie is like, okay.
It kind
of
cooks.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad you agree. Because I was like, am I like, I felt kind of like, because I knew this wasn't
this movie jumps the shark.
Well,
and never recovers.
Yeah. And like, I always thought like, like, because I knew this had bad reviews, but I'm watching the first act of this movie and like nothing's causing me to hate it.
Yeah.
Because they, well, something that they set up pretty nicely is like, how did he run away from the basketball? He snuck in somebody's car, mm-hmm. which is foreshadowing something that's going to happen later. So yeah, Danny is at the police station. The Terry, John Travolta, I really need to know like characters' names in this because I do not know their names.
Frank
Susan.
Morrison.
Susan's the name. And then it's Frank. Susan and Frank. Susan and Frank. Frank being John Travolta. They show up and they talk with Danny.
Yes.
And again, he's like, I'm mad.
Just so angry.
I'm so angry. Danny's like, he's pent up rage.
Yeah.
That he's so mad that his mom is like, engaged and marrying this other guy. John Travolta's just trying to be like,
supportive
and set a good example, like, you know, and like, so, Danny, you should give Rick a chance.
Yeah, and so he brings Danny shipbuilding and makes a deal with him that he'll go to the wedding if Danny does.
Yeah, right.
And we are introduced to a thread here that I'm very confused by. So John Travolta is also in a relationship.
He is.
Why is he so bitter at his ex-wife for getting remarried? And why is Danny so bitter when John Travolta is also in a relationship with another woman?
Well, I think this is a clear case study of parent favoritism.
Mm-hmm.
Danny clearly likes his dad more
than
his mom.
More.
Significantly more. And it might have been that way even when the two were together.
Yeah.
Which oftentimes is a driving force of divorce. Mm-hmm. I bring back Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams and Sally Field. Right? That's Sally Field, right? The kids obviously love their dad, Robin Williams, much more than Sally Field. And it
have
kind
you
of.
Have you ever seen the guy who re-edited Mrs. Doubtfire as a horror movie?
No.
It's a trailer re-edited. It's really good. You should watch it.
Okay, we'll watch it. I think for this case in Domestic Disturbance, like, he clearly just likes Travolta more or Frank more than Susan, his dad. And so he sees it as his mom's way of solidifying the divorce for sure. Meaning there's no way that
there's no getting back.
Mom and dad are
going to
get back together.
You can't go home again.
And it's his mom's action of doing that. So he has a reaction against that. I think, whereas, you know, Travolta dating, or Frank dating somebody else, like, it does, open that question of, like, why is he all, like, pent up about it? But again, I think, and also, she is engaged to Rick.
Yeah.
And had been in a relationship with Rick before Frank had met, what's his girlfriend's name?
Diane.
So, that's my guess. But so anyway,
So they make an agreement to go to the wedding together.
Yeah. Travolta goes with his girlfriend, Diane.
Yeah, with Diane. And they get married. And then as they're saying their vows, who shows up?
The Bush himself.
Steve Buscemi.
The Bush.
He shows up and he just kind of slinks off to the side and like raises his beer.
And Frank sees him come in.
Yeah.
And
Frank's like, who's this guy?
Who's this guy? And he's oddly curious about, like,
he's weirdly curious about this guy just because he notices Rick gets concerned when he sees him.
Well, and it's like, have you ever been to a wedding where you know one side very well but not the other side? Like, there's a lot of people who you're not going to recognize.
Yeah.
But why is, like, Steve Buscemi, who's, like, ominously standing in the back,
gets his attention?
That's the
because he notices that Rick, like, gets kind of scared when he sees him.
Right.
So he's curious.
So he talks to
married, and then Rick pulls Ray, Steve Buscemi, aside. And it's like, what do you want? Ray's like, I found you. Surprised you? I found you. He's like, when we were in the joint, we would talk about what you're going to use all our money on. You owe me some money.
So they already lay the groundwork for some criminal activity between these two. Now, do they say what exactly? No. Because I thought it's like, oh, they're bank robbers, which would have been really cool. Right? Wouldn't this have been a much cooler movie if, like,
they're bank robbers?
But they aren't they? Like, I don't think they are.
No, they're just racketeers.
They're racketeers.
And he's also killed people. Because.
Attempted murder.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't killed anybody. He just.
Yet.
Dun, dun, dun. They're already talking about criminal activity. We don't get the details quite yet, but we know there's a money that is owed to Steve Buscemi.
Yes.
And so.
From Rick.
Vince Vaughn, Rick, is saying, like, hey.
It's so funny that Vince Vaughn's in this movie. I'd love.
Have you ever seen a Vince Vaughn movie where slightly impressed by his acting skills.
He's good in some comedies, and he's actually serious. Vince Vaughn is a very mixed bag.
Okay.
There are Vince Vaughn in a serious role is really only good when he's being slimy and mean. It's like he's the drill sergeant in Hacksaw Ridge. He's actually pretty good in.
Yeah.
I have not seen True Detective, but I've heard he is peak slime in that. But when Vince Vaughn pops up as either like a slimy character or in a comedy, he's usually pretty. He carries well.
But any role like this that we're seeing.
Yeah, no, not really.
He tries to play like a serious guy. Not even, and more than just a serious guy.
He can't do serious.
A villain. He's supposed to be scary.
Yeah.
And just for yourself, were you ever scared of Vince Vaughn in this movie?
No, and that's why this movie rules. Yeah. This movie is shot like a slasher movie. It's shot like Halloween. Except. Instead of when the camera like pans around, you look in the mirror, you see fucking Vince Vaughn instead of Michael Myers.
Idea.
Yeah.
Swap the roles.
John Travolta is
John Travolta's Rick. And Vince Vaughn's the dad.
Mm.
I don't know.
It might work. I think John Travolta as a serial killer, though, would be funny.
Combine the roles of his dad character in She's So Lovely. Mm. Combine that with what's a good villain role that he did? Those are all comedic villains. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of I'm taking the big and scary dad, combining him with a psychopath version of himself that he's played, but subtle psychopath.
He's right.
Yeah, it really hasn't, has he?
I think you would run into the same problem of Travolta if he was playing the serial. The way this movie is structured, the serial killer is very funny. Unless you cast a really intimidating actor.
Who could play the stepdad and be good?
You need to cast I could buy a James Woods in that role.
From General's Daughter.
Yeah, General's Daughter. James Woods could do it. You just need someone who has an air of sinister to them.
Could you buy him as the charismatic, though?
It'd be kind of a problem.
And handsome enough for the mom to marry. He's a little older already.
You just need someone who can do menace well.
Yeah.
With just their looks. And Vince Vaughn just looks funny.
Yeah, I can't think of who at the time might have been this is 2001, right?
Yeah.
2001 when this came out. wait a second. I might know somebody.
Because I mean, there are plenty of people, and I'm sure if I thought about it, I could think of some. I'm just not really thinking about.
Well, I'm just trying to think. Stephen Lang. Yeah, he was in stuff around
I can think of anyone who's played a psychopath in a movie. They could probably pull it off.
I think Stephen Lang could have done something pretty well.
Stephen Lang,
the blind guy in Don't Breathe.
The Quaritch in Avatar.
Yeah, no, I genuinely think he probably could do it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He's mostly in TV in the early 2000s.
But Vince Vaughn has the look; he just doesn't have the he kind of looks like a he has the smarmy businessman look. He just can't pull off when he turns into a serial killer.
Yeah.
Okay. So they get married, and it's established that Vince Vaughn's tells Ray, "I'll put you up in a hotel while I get the money."
Yeah.
And which is just code for him trying to figure out what his plan is.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Frank starts talking to Ray. And Ray tells him, oh, yeah, we used to be in business together. I was just in D.C. I thought I'd pop by. And then he talks to Rick about it in a little bit. And Rick tells him, oh, yeah, we've been friends since childhood. And Trolls is just like, oh, these are two different stories I'm getting about this guy. It's a little weird. But he doesn't think about it. A few weeks later, he sees Ray in a diner. Because not really much that happens between those two. Rick and Frank both go sailing together with Danny.
Yeah, that does happen.
As a bonding experience to see his two dads together.
And they have some conversation,
yeah.
Travolta and Vaughn.
Vaughn offers to buy a bunch of his boats.
Yeah, he's like, I bought this a resort or something, and I want to get a bunch of boats.
Mm.
So he wants to buy. And he's like, well, we're kind of in busy season. And by the way, part of the issue, there's two issues with Travolta's business here. One, he doesn't charge enough for the boats, yeah, as described at the very beginning, because he's too nice and he loves the, he's one of those, like, he works for the craft, not for,
yeah,
the money.
Works for the community.
Yeah. And then secondly, the other reason is because nobody wants to buy boats.
Yeah.
Two reasons why they said, like, Travolta's poor in this movie. So then here comes Vince Vaughn and he's like, well, hey, like, I want to buy a bunch of boats. And then Travolta is like, kind of hesitant about,
yeah,
it. He's like, well, I don't know. We're pretty busy.
He doesn't,
like,
want to feel like he's working for his wife's new husband. He,
yeah,
he's putting that subservient,
yeah, it's
position.
Like,
there's a power dynamic at play.
Right. It's, he's so, like, what's the word? He said power dynamic, but there's another word about it. It's, like, so demasculine.
Yeah. He doesn't want to be demasculated.
Yeah, demasculated. And so, which, that's, it's the pride that's getting in the way there. Mm. Which is a weird reason, but whatever. Yeah. So, then
he tells Rick, hey, if you want to get to Danny's heart, there's two things you got to do. What's the first one? Because the second one is buy him stuff.
It's like, make sure he knows that you love him.
Oh yeah. Know that you love him and then buy him stuff.
And buy him stuff. And he said, I think he's looking for a really good glove.
Yeah.
Gives him a pointer.
Yeah. So Rick buys Danny a glove. And then is really harsh with him.
They start playing catch. And when they're playing catch, like,
Danny's not throwing well. He's like, I used to play catch with my dad. He's like, well, if your dad was so good, why the fuck didn't he teach you how to throw a ball right?
And this movie's rated R. Or no, it isn't.
It's PG-13.
Which is a problem.
Yeah.
That's one of the bigger issues with
movie. He gets really aggressive with the ball. And then Rick's like, if you're not even trying, I'm leaving. He throws the glove down. He goes inside. And then crash, a ball goes through the window right behind him. And Rick's like, this kid threw a ball at me. And then we cut to Frank talking with Susan. And she's like, yeah, he threw a ball at Rick. Oh, no, we cut to him talking with Danny about it. And yeah, he's like, Danny, why'd you do that ball? And he's like, I just get so angry all the time, Dad.
It's like, Rick was being so mean with me or whatever. Like, he was, like, throwing the ball really hard at me.
Yeah.
So I threw really hard back at him.
And, that's basically. And he's like, I want to live with you, Dad. And he's like, oh, you know, people don't want my boats. I can't afford that.
Yeah.
And then there's really not, like, a lot in terms of beats that happen in this.
Well, I think it's pretty
the next is the big scene. So Vaughn comes home and Susan tells him, I'm pregnant.
Oh, right.
And then that makes Danny mad. So he runs away, or he climbs out the window and hides in the back of Rick's station wagon.
Yeah.
And then Rick drives away in it. Danny's just laying down in the back. He picks up Ray.
And he says, I gotta run an errand or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he picks up Ray. Ray gets in the car. Vaughn and Buscemi have not seen this kid hiding, yeah, in the backseat yet, which is plausible.
Yeah.
Like, it's true. And by the way, this was foreshadowed with, like, in the very beginning of the movie, the way the kid leaves a basketball game is he hops in somebody's car,
yeah,
or the trunk. So this is, again, what I'm saying. It's like the first act, well, yeah, as we're talking about
it.
It
does set up payoff well.
It sets up and pays off pretty well. But then we get to the scene.
Where this movie, like, jumps the shark and just keeps flying.
Yeah. So
they're driving through downtown. And
it's raining.
He's telling Buscemi, I'm going to take you to the place where the money's stashed.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's at this old brickworks. So they drive to the old brickworks and they pull in.
And he's like,
can you grab the bag in the back?
Yeah.
And so Buscemi turns around, he sees the kid, and he's like, oh,
you're not going to believe.
And then stabs him in the heart with an ice pick. The Iceman cometh. He just stabs him right through the heart. Buscemi immediately dies.
And
Danny's terrified.
Danny sees all this happen. Yeah.
And so Rick takes Buscemi's body and drags it out and puts it in a brick incinerator that's perfectly human-shaped.
I mean, I kind of thought, isn't like a mortuary.
No, it's a brickyard.
It's a brickyard,
it has a smelting thing that's exactly the size of a gurney.
Yeah, that you would normally see in, like, when they cremate people.
Yeah.
But this is a brickyard.
Yeah, brickworks.
I never thought about that. Like, I actually kind of just like, yeah, sure.
I mean, I'm sure brickworks do have places.
I'm sure, like, I just kind of thought, like, okay, I buy that part. Mm-hmm. But then the kid, like, Danny gets out of the car, and he's, like, immediately in, like, survival mode. Yeah. Like, oh, shit, my dad.
And the Halloween music starts playing as Vaughn's, like, walking around with this ice pick, all Michael Myers style, as Buscemi burns in the background. Danny escapes and he runs to Frank's. And he tells Frank everything.
And all this happens off screen, by the way. But so when Danny escapes, we just see Vince Vaughn get back in the Suburban, drive away.
And he gets home.
He gets home and there's cop cars there.
She's like, Danny ran away. And she's like, he's telling this awful story that you murdered somebody.
Yeah. And the cops are like, hey, so we need you to come to the station. We're going to talk to Danny and make sure we talk about some things. Mm. So happening side by side is Danny, Frank, and a detective so far to my knowledge, I believe it's just Danny, Frank, and then a detective.
Yes.
But then more and more people start joining this conversation, which should not be in the room when this happens.
And it's like, this kid accused someone of murder. We're going to bring them in the room
with
him.
We're going to bring him in the room with them.
So they bring all the family together in this room.
And they're all talking about it. And he's just like, he died. And like Vince Vaughn is right there in the room.
Yeah, and he's like, I didn't kill nobody.
And he's like, stop it, Danny. You're hurting Rick's feelings. And they're like, he killed somebody. and they're
all like, he's making this up. And I'm like, this is a pretty elaborate story to be making up.
All of it.
Like if he was just like, I was out with my stepdad and he killed a guy and then I ran away.
And he didn't know, like, I think the crux of it that made it like hard for the cops was like he didn't know the guy's name.
Yeah.
Because if they knew if it was Ray, then okay, quick, they can check where was Ray staying. Who were you meeting with? Like, they didn't ask Frank any questions, by the way. They don't ask them, what were you doing out in your Suburban? I was running some errands. Can anyone verify that? Mm-hmm. Do you have an alibi? Like, they don't
ask.
They're
just like, so your keys are up front.
Immediately dismissive. The cop even says, it's like, I'm sick and tired of this kid's bullshit. Like,
they send cops to check out the brickworks and to check out the car. They can find no evidence.
There's no evidence.
Vince Vaughn literally just like rubs a rag on the seat where he stabbed the guy, and they
like,
and
if
they
you
find
black light, there's gonna be like blood stains or something. Like,
it's the worst investigation.
The worst. And did he wear gloves? Like, I don't know. There's so many instances that cops should have been able to like figure this out in like 2 seconds.
Danny home with.
With Rick and Susan.
And Frank's like, why are you lying to me, kid? And then overnight, he stands on a pier and is like, the kid's never lied to me before. He's telling the truth. And so the next day...
Well, wait a second. Because he goes home with Rick and Susan and he's like, I don't want to go back with him. I don't want to go back with him. And like, at this point, Frank Travolta is like a little concerned for Danny, but he doesn't really believe in the story right away. He's like, Danny, I really think you should stop. He's like, you don't believe me, do you? He's like,
he has like an overnight come to Jesus moment.
Well, what happened? Because then he talks to Rick. Frank and Rick talk about it. And he's like,
Danny never lied to
me. You know, Danny lies. Danny does lie. He lies to his mom. He lies to police. But Danny doesn't lie to me. He never lies to me. He's like, wait, you don't actually think I did this? And he's like, probably not. But that's not enough.
I don't want my kid living with a probably.
Yes. Which, so that I was cool with.
Yeah.
That I was okay with. I was like, if you're like a dad and you're like not 100% certain, like
person your kid's living with might be a murderer.
But then overnight, he's like, no, he did this. Like, Rick 100%
he immediately goes
this.
Into a custody battle.
He immediately does. He like takes him from school and like literally kidnaps him. Yeah. He kidnaps
Gets immediately pulled over by the cops.
Immediately pulled over by the cops, and then Travolta doesn't get arrested, per se.
No, his wife doesn't press charges.
But he does have to, like, the kid does have to go stay with his, like, Susan and Rick.
And the night before the custody battle, Danny's just in his room, and he locks the door, and he thinks he sees footsteps outside. The footsteps go, and he turns around. Vince Vaughn's in his room.
Vince Vaughn's in his room.
There's a second door he forgot to close.
And this is another moment when Vince Vaughn's supposed to be scary and is just not.
And he's just like, oh, what's the deal with swingers, huh?
So he, like, puts him in a chokehold, I think.
He's
right?
like, if you...
you say anything to the judge about what
your mom
saying.
Would be upset if you left.
Yeah.
And if you don't want anything to happen to your dad.
He basically threatens him.
He threatens to kill Frank.
Yeah. So then cut to the next day. They're at the court custody battle. Mm-hmm. And
Travolta's lawyer invites Danny to the stand.
And they ask Danny. And Danny lies.
What happened? Danny says, I lied.
I lied.
And Travolta's like, what?
Yeah. He's like, did he threaten you? Did he threaten you?
Travolta gets drunk. His girlfriend leaves him because she put it.
I forgot about his girlfriend.
She leaves him because she's like, you put your wife through this custody battle for nothing.
It's weird.
Strange. And he gets drunk, and then he has a moment where he kind of he still doesn't really know what to believe because Danny's not talking to him because he feels guilty. And so he confronts Danny and Rick one night after Rick wins Citizen of the Year award or something like that.
Right, yeah. And he's drunk.
Yeah,
and
he punches Rick.
And then he gets back to his truck. And then Danny...
He's like, oh, you dropped your wallet.
Drops his wallet, Danny's own wallet.
Yeah.
And then picks it up and then runs to Travolta in his car. Says, hey, you dropped your wallet. Like, no, I didn't. It's like, hey, Dad, you really got to stop pushing him. Yeah. He says he's going to, like, hurt...
Kill you
or whatever. So then... That's when he like just doesn't respond, and then Danny goes back. Cut to that night at Rick and Susan's house. Once again,
Rick appears. And
Rick
threatens
appears
him.
And threatens him again. He says, "What did you tell him?" It's like, "Hey,
no, this is the one. This is the one with the mirror.
The mirror bit with the wallet, right?" He's like, "Hey, yeah. I think I lost $5." He's like,
"I think I was hooting and hollering at this shot. I got a video. I thought it was so funny because it's this really dramatic pan." Around this.
Oh my god.
Like, you're expecting the reveal of like a monster or serial killer or something. It's just Vince Vaughn. Like, the dude from Swingers is just hanging out.
God, you're right. This movie really does.
I fucking tell
you,
Steve Buscemi should have been played by Jon Favreau. They should have just made it a Swingers reunion.
Well, like, this movie really does hinge on.
It has the aesthetics of a slasher.
Yeah, it does, but...
And it's just Vince Vaughn, and that's why it's so funny.
Do you remember, was it Cape Fear, where it's got, like, Robert De Niro in it? And, like, it's kind of a similar, like, only Robert De Niro's, like, what's his role in that?
I forget.
But it's, like, a similar thing where you have to make an ordinary man seem scary.
Yeah.
Like, the crazy neighbor, like, ordeal, right?
Yeah.
I'm just looking it up. A convicted rapist released from prison after serving...
But
oh well, that's not really the same thing. Well, I guess no, it is kind of the same thing. Like Cape Fear, I mean, like they do build up. Like Robert De Niro has to be scary in that movie.
He has to be fear,
right? And
yeah, Cape Fear.
But like, look at him in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like that would be scary.
Yes, if I saw that guy coming
that out. Same shot with the mirror, and it was Robert De Niro.
Yeah,
you would be freaked out.
De Niro could have played that role. But instead, it's that very hilarious Vince Vaughn just appearing.
Yeah, just not a thing.
I was genuinely like having a really good time with the second half of this movie because it's just so absurd. It just is Vince Vaughn becoming a slasher villain.
Trying to become a slasher villain. Keyword.
He threatens Danny again. And so then we are back with Travolta and he starts his investigation.
Yeah.
How does his he starts going to every motel in town to try and find out where Ray Walton stood.
Because he thinks Ray was the one who died.
Yeah.
Because he's like, yeah, Danny would not have known who Ray was.
Yeah.
But I think
they were up to some shifty business and they both lied about how they knew each other.
Yeah. Which he tells the cops that and they're just like,
whatever.
Stop bugging him. Like these cops are so fucking dumb. This is like, these are the kids' movie cops, except it's a PG-13 drama. He goes to every motel.
He eventually finds him at like the Cozy Cone or whatever the fuck it's called.
He says, when did he leave? He's like, October or something, something. And he's like, really? That day? Because it's the same day
that Danny
calls.
He disappears.
So he's like, oh man, like you have that on record? And he's like, yeah. And he pulls out his records.
And they find out there was a call girl he used a lot.
Yeah.
So Travolta goes and talks to her. She's like, he owes me money. And he's like, get in line.
Yeah.
And he buys Roy's lighter from her.
Yeah, he has Ray's lighter.
So he takes that to the police and he's like, dust it for prints. They dust it for prints and they can only find hers.
Yeah.
And Charles is like, ah, no, I've been fooled. He runs into Rick outside who kind of threatens him.
Does Rick threaten him?
He kind of does. He was like, Travolta just tells him, I think you did it. I know you did it. I'm going to find the proof.
Yeah. Again, I must have zoned out in this part.
And this is basically leading us to the end.
No way.
Yeah. Because after this, Travolta, he has a moment of revelation because he's sitting at his desk and he sees a picture of Danny in a basketball jersey. And he's like, so he runs back to the prostitute's house And he's like, you said all he did was shag and watch basketball.
What team did he root for?
And then it cuts to him typing in the word Chicago.
Right.
Because he was watching the Chicago Bulls.
Because the Chicago bank robbers.
Yeah. And he looks up Roy Chicago, Roy Walton, or whatever his name is.
And they find a newspaper article about four racketeering.
Yeah, three of them don't look like. One of them is
Vince Vaughn.
Right. Well, one of the three that he looks at who were convicted were was Steve Buscemi, and then he clicks on another name, and it's Vince Vaughn, the one who got away.
Yeah, Rick Barnes.
His name is like Jack something.
Oh yeah, his real name.
Jack
he changed
Stevens
his name
or
yeah.
something. And so Travolta emails that to the police, and then he prints out a copy. And then who
but
appears
then
behind
what happens?
Him? Vince Vaughn.
Vince Vaughn.
Who punches him and then lights his his boat making place on fire.
Boat making place, his shipyard.
Shipyard on fire.
Yeah, with like a paint thinner or whatever. Yeah. He just grabs whatever's around. But then
Vaughn is
goofball.
The worst fucking crook.
But this goofball.
This jamoke.
Talk about.
He's literally like Ghostface from Scream. Where, like, he just is incompetent.
Yeah.
He just, like, immediately lights himself on fire.
Yeah, he tries to light a lighter, but he poured enough kerosene or gas on his arm that as soon as he lights it, his arm goes up in flames.
He's like, ah! he rips his sleeve off.
Yanks off his jacket.
And then he runs out, leaving Travolta alive.
Like, I'm just trying to think. Your whole point of this movie is to make a slasher and to make the stepdad look like a dangerous, serious guy.
He's such
guy.
A goof.
Yeah, add that in the movie to make him look more incompetent yeah. and a goof. Like, come on. So, yeah, the shipyard burns. John Travolta wakes up.
Yeah, and he runs out.
And he gets out before it explodes.
A log falls on him from the ceiling, and then Michael Caine appears and says, what was the point of all those push-ups if you can't even lift a bloody log?
Fuck
and
you.
He pushes the log off. Michael Caine has disappeared at this point. We don't know where he went and why he was there. And Travolta runs out of the burning boat factory or whatever the fuck.
He makes it out before it explodes.
And then it explodes. Yeah. And Danny and his wife and Susan are watching this. Danny's obviously very concerned that his dad might have just exploded.
Yeah.
Much like Uncle Bob before him.
Ah, shit.
There's an urban cowboy throwback.
Oh, God.
I wrote in my notebook, this is the worst criminal ever. And then I wrote the words, this is amazing, right afterward.
So, what? It's the house after that, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, the mom knows, it's like, oh, they're like, oh, hey, like,
They're getting
in the car.
Danny runs upstairs and he's, like, crying, obviously. He's upset. But then when Susan goes to the bathroom, she looks in and Rick is tending to his burned arm.
Oh.
She's like, he started the fire. She's like, Danny, we got to get out of here.
Which, like... I guess is a good deduction.
Yeah, and she makes a pretty solid argument to Rick. She's like, yeah, he's just very concerned. I'm going to take him. I don't think you should be there. And Rick like kind of goes along with it. He right. understands it. But then
he sees it.
Frank calls them.
Frank
and
calls.
Rick notices.
And because he checks caller ID.
Whoa!
Oh, no.
And so.
The end of the Scream franchise. Caller ID.
And so they... What happens right after? Oh, they're in the garage.
Yeah.
And Rick comes in and, like, takes Susan out of the car. But then before he can do anything worse, Travolta just, like, fucking barrels into the room.
Is that what? No, what happens is, so, like, they hit him somehow because they trap him in the garage or something.
Yeah, they trap him in the garage and they lock all the doors to the house.
And then they're about to call the police, but then he pulls the landline. Yeah, which is in the garage. And then he gets in the house, like he breaks through a window,
yeah.
I think. And this is where I'm like fuzzy on details, but so he knocks out Susan.
Yeah.
By the way, she lost her baby at that
point.
Yeah,
she miscarries.
She miscarries.
As a result of him hitting her.
It's totally like
it's
overlooked.
It's a
very glossed over.
Very strange. Part.
Like, it's almost kind of celebrated. Like, I'm sorry about your baby.
And she's like, whatever.
Whatever. with a serial killer. And then he chases after Danny upstairs.
Who, like, they have, like, little Michael Myers back and forth.
Yeah.
And he successfully, like, sneaks behind him and whacks him with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
And Rick goes down.
So then that's when he goes to get his mom.
And he's trying to get a phone, and he runs in the garage and tries to find her cell phone in the car.
And that's when
Rick just appears behind him.
Yeah.
And like is trying to choke him.
And that's when
this guy is dead ass like a Michael Myers, where he's just like, just like walking around choking people, surviving anything they throw at him. He's like lit on fire, whacked in the head with a metal bat.
Yeah.
And then Travolta barrels into the room.
A
fight breaks out. Electric starts. They bring a cable and like there's sparks flying everywhere.
Yeah, they're like they're throwing punches and like they're tussling. Yeah. He swings a chair. He swings a crowbar or something. And smashes him through like the window, the car. Like,
and it ends with
it's a whole stunt.
Vaughn has a crowbar.
Yeah,
and Travolta positions him in front of the electrical box. And Vaughn swings the crowbar and it hits the
electrical box. And he shocks him.
He shocks himself to death. And
what
he dies.
Fucking goofball.
What a joke.
Did we really get through the entire plot of that movie that fast?
Hey, we're not done yet. After this, they all reconcile. They apologize that you miscarried, and they drive off to the hospital, and the movie ends. Stuart, care to talk about the hair?
Oh, right! The hair! Cue the hangover ranking music. Welcome to the Hair Ranking Report. So the hair.
Does this hair not exist as much as this movie does?
Wait, what?
I was asking if the hair is non-existent because this movie doesn't exist.
No, it exists. This hair is going to be, like, I think this is good hair.
This is good hair. I like this hair. This is complimentary to him.
Like, can you pull up the list and I'll pull up a photo? Yeah. Because I saw this and the first thing I thought was,
ooh, this is going high.
Oh, my God. The hair. So this is kind of a callback to, like, his long hair days.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, how should I put this?
It's not quite angelic like Michael.
Right. It's, like, halfway between, like, it's almost, it's, like, 40%. Nah, not even that much. It's, like, 30% of the way to Michael hair.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking for a good photo of like John Travolta's hair. Okay, I think that might be the best I got. All right, so let me see this. Where does Michael land? Oh, he's really high. He's like Michael. Put it below Swordfish above Shout.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think that's where it's going to go.
Below Swordfish above Shout. You got it.
That's a new
number nine.
That's a new number nine.
Whoa, a lot of new arrivals up here coming in. For a movie that doesn't exist, it has a pretty good ranking here. There we go, Domestic Disturbance. I'm not quite sure why this movie's called Domestic. I mean, I guess there's a domestic disturbance at the end. It's all about relationship or something like that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's the hair. It's good hair.
Very good hair.
It's good hair. So I think it deserves that spot. Okay. So, we just talked about the movie. Do you have the post context?
Yeah,
how it did?
So this movie comes out.
It was made for $75 million, you said.
$75 million.
Fuck.
Big flop.
Well, how much did
it make? Makes $54 million. So it loses $20 million, not accounting for like marketing and all those extra costs. So it's another flop for Travolta in his string of flops he's in right now. Not good for him.
Not good.
This movie has a 24% Rotten Tomatoes. That reason exactly what I would say my final thoughts on this movie are. Well made, but extremely predictable. Domestic Disturbance is an average thriller that may work better on TV.
That's exactly my thoughts. That is the perfect descriptor of it.
Roger Ebert awarded it 1.5 stars out of 4. And he said, the Chicago film critics were shown the long last reel. They were shown a reel without sound for the end of the movie. And he says, he saw the correct one the following Monday and scathingly said of it in his review, the earlier reel is lacking the final music. Music is the last thing wrong with the reel.
Wow.
Roger Ebert, not a fan. Travolta gets nominated for another Razzie for this year, which is just like, they're kicking the guy at this point. There are significantly worse performances than the ones that he's giving right now.
I just like, what is their beef with him?
Yeah.
Like, if I was Travolta, I would just, like, be walking down the sidewalk, and the Razzies is, like, that guy who'd be like, yo, wanka! And I would turn around and be like, what the fuck's your problem, dude?
I mean, he's in the place Adam Sandler is in now, where just, like, they give him Razzies for literally everything, deserved or not, when there's probably worse movies that came out.
They don't actually do their homework.
Yeah.
All they do is...
They're
just there for the lulz, and it's like, hey, what did Travolta do? Well, he was in this actual good... Nominated for a Razzie!
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Razzies for you.
But Yeah, movie has no impact on his career at this point, which is not what he needs right now. This is a very bad string of events he's going through.
Well, it's like it's just another one of flops that he's been in now. So first it was Battlefield Earth, and then Lucky Numbers, and Swordfish made some money, right?
I can't remember. We had a bit of a break in recording. So you folks just heard Swordfish last week, but it's been a while since we talked about Swordfish. Swordfish did not make a lot of money. It only made $40 million over its budget. So accounting for marketing and all that, did not make a big profit.
Okay. So, but it wasn't a flop.
Yeah.
It was just.
Well, it was a mega flop. It was just a. It did whatever.
Little flop.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it's not looking good. Not looking good for a boy.
Yeah, things
Johnny
are not
T.
looking good.
And we're still in the A-list era.
Yeah.
According to you.
We are still in the A-list era. He's still getting, like, this is an A-list role. He's still getting A-list roles.
How many more do we have until we get to Travolta-sploitation?
Somewhere like 7 or 8.
7 or 8.
2008 is kind of the last year where things shift for him. It's where he kind of falls out of Hollywood's graces.
Hmm. Yeah.
But
our third and final phase of John Travolta's career, because it has not changed yet.
Yes. Until he has his comeback role, which I want to believe is going to happen.
Which is what movie?
I have no idea.
You don't think it's going to be a sequel to a certain...
No, I don't think it's going to be a sequel to anything, but I hope it's... What?
You don't think it's going to be a sequel to anything?
Oh, we'll talk about that.
I'm just saying.
I got a pitch. We're going to talk about it.
I know you got a pitch.
We got a whole episode. We're going to talk about my pitch.
Okay.
But yeah, that's Domestic Disturbance. Any final thoughts? Mine are just that Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah, honestly, I would probably give this a 25%
yeah.
for me. Just because
I'd
of how...
I knew somewhere around like 40-ish. It's not good, but I was entered. I thought it was very funny.
Purely on the merits of the movie, not on Travolta. Because I think Travolta, he has some stumbles in this movie performance-wise, but for the most part,
he's good. He's fine.
I'm okay with him. The first act of this movie like sets itself
kinda
up
cooks.
Pretty nicely, but it just flies off the rails the rest of the movie. So, yeah, I dozed off and, you know, just kind of checked out a few times. Because I would check back in, and sure enough, the thing I would guess would happen happened because it's so predictable. So, yeah, those are my final thoughts.
That's my thought. I wish I had more to say, but this is one of those movies that we've had, like Mad City, where there's really not much to talk about.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What are we gracing our audience with next week?
Thank you, folks, for listening to this episode of Domestic Disturbance. Next week, you have Austin Powers in Goldmember to look forward to. That is a hoot of an episode, though we definitely have not recorded it yet.
No, we haven't.
With guest Alex Wilson, who I think you folks are really going to enjoy.
When you hear him.
We haven't heard him yet.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, please remember to rate, review, subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. Give us a like, review, all the favorites. Find us at TravoltingPod on Twitter or Instagram. TravoltingPodcast@gmail.com if you have any questions. Find me on Twitter at Jeff W. Sweeney.
Find me on Instagram at StuartElmore95. I am recently unemployed. So
yeah, we're back to the original days.
We're back to the original days here.
Where you're the one.
Well, this episode's coming out in...
So you might actually be employed again.
I might be employed by the time this comes out, but as of when we were recording this,
you're on a break.
I'm on a break right now.
Which we love to see. You earned it.
Thank you.
And as always, special thanks to Rebecca Johnson for our graphic design and Michael Van Bodem Smith for our theme.
Love them both.
That is now taking you out. See you folks next week for Austin Powers in Goldmember, a movie that John Travolta is actually in, if you were curious.
Great.